Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, September 1st, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox has a new iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or Slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where Tom goes away and everything gets weird.
Yeah, everything gets
and then
a
we'll
strange.
Kick the tech news like we're supposed to. Kick
yeah.
and stomp.
We kicked it counterclockwise.
Yeah.
It's funny, when we were starting the show, I was doing my dance, like I always do at the, you know, I kind of do the pump up, and then I realized, oh, look, you're watching me
yeah,
dance.
Yeah, that's the whole reason you should be on the video version anyway, right?
Exactly.
And the downloads went up that day.
It's all the counterintuitive stuff that works out. So, lots of stuff to talk about. We're going to start off with some HTC Titan Windows phones announced. Mango phones.
I'll cherry dance to that.
Who's excited about these Mango phones? Ayaz?
Well, we talked about this a bit on Windows Weekly today. The HTC Titan is a monstrously large phone. It's kind of like those Android phones we've seen a lot of. 4.7-inch screen. I think it's 800 by 480, so it's not the highest res you can get. It has a single-core processor for some reason. Why single core? I'm not really sure. But this is supposed to be, you know, one of the nicer phones that HTC has launched, and it's running Mango. So a lot of people are excited because this is coming out next month.
I'm just like, dude, look at this. F2.2 lens? That's not so bad. I don't know. The res could be a little higher for a 4.7, I'm going to say.
They're pretty beautiful, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, the size is nice. The resolution looks pretty nice to me. I mean, I'm obviously just looking at this video. Alex Gumpel just ran in from off camera and waved a phone at us from the corner, so I assume that he's excited.
Yes,
I don't know if he has one.
He has a Windows Phone 7 device, or they just call Windows phones now. I keep calling them Windows
he
Phone
likes
7.
Being the Windows Phone guy at TWiT.
He's the one.
Well, he doesn't have a lot of competition, so he is that guy.
That's
right.
There's also the HTC Radar phone, mm-hmm. which is the mid-range one, the 3.8-inch super LCD. I don't know what makes it super. 1 gigahertz processor, 8 gigabytes of storage. Half a gig of RAM, and this one's the mid-range one. So it only has a 5-megapixel camera compared to the Titan, which has an 8-megapixel camera. Okay, so since Alex is the only one with a Windows phone, do these phones make anybody excited to want to buy one?
No.
Okay, so what's the deal? What does Windows have to do to get all of us excited about buying a Windows phone? Because I've said, I mean, I feel like a broken record. I love the UI of mm-hmm. Windows Phone. I love the tiles. I think it looks great. People who have the phones love them, but there just aren't very many of them.
I don't know if it's as much what does Microsoft need to do with it to make it more enticing as much as it's how bad does Google have to foul up with Android for people to get fed up enough to look for something else. And if you're, you know, get burned a few times on, you know, Android or iOS or whatever, I mean, if neither of those are your option, well, then this is your option. It's kind of like the, you know, lesser of two evils kind of thing.
Or you're
not going to go to RIM.
When?
Sorry.
I don't know. Some BlackBerry users might disagree with you.
You're right. 50 songs.
That sucks, though. I mean, if you're Microsoft, you imagine it's like, well, iOS didn't work, and Android finally got so, you know, it wasn't open enough, so then I just ended up with a Windows phone. Now
well,
it's
Windows mobile phone was fine for that audience. It just never really broke out. I mean, I had one. I thought it was great. Well, but it's totally a geek phone.
I think what could happen, though, is because of the tile interface on the phone and on Xbox and Windows 8 coming up, it's going to kind of feel the same. So if you get used to Windows 8 like in a year or two and you're like, hey, this looks kind of nice. This is the way I want to see information. It wouldn't be that hard going to a smaller device. So it might take a year before people go, well, yeah, this is good. Because the tile interface, when you compare it to Android and you compare it to iOS, which all kind of look alike, the tile interface doesn't look anything like that.
That's true.
So I think that maybe what Microsoft's going to get away with is they'll teach people how to use it with Windows 8. Mm-hmm. They'll see the tile and go, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be seeing this. And then maybe it'll have like a halo effect because I don't know, odd thing to say about Microsoft, the halo effect, not an Xbox joke.
No, but I see where you're going with this because much like, you know, the users that they've got, you know, an iPad and an iPhone, but then they have a PC at home or something like that. And then eventually there's some people that get sucked in through, you know, this even happened with the iPod, people getting their first taste of an Apple product through that. And then like, oh, so you think that this could happen with Windows 8 basically in reverse, the home computer kind of transitioning to the smartphone?
Well, yeah, I mean,
which is totally the opposite of what iOS has done for OS X Lion, for example, mm-hmm. where OS X Lion now is getting some iOS features because people are familiar with it enough so that there's a little bit of a learning curve, but it kind of starts to make sense. Well, it's almost like Microsoft has to prove it on the desktop side in order for their phones to get adopted more.
I think it's not just the learning curve, though, but like you said, the integration. Windows 8, you got the Xbox 360, you got a Windows phone. You're like in a Windows Live universe, right? Just much like you are on Android with the whole, you know, all the Google apps and everything, and much like you are on the iOS side with, you know, if you've got a Mac and an iPhone and you're all doing your cloud stuff you guys do. Sorry, I'm not an iPhone user.
But that's
why I'm saying, Rim, what are you doing there? Syncing with Exchange?
And your playbook, because your playbook's useless without it.
Yay.
But I mean, at least Microsoft's got the backing of HTC and they're making their phones. So HTC doesn't care. They'll make any phone. But I think it's when Nokia goes ahead and introduces their line of phones, and if they actually have competitive prices, that's the real thing. If you can beat it on price and your ecosystem, buzzword, is really good, it might get people.
So the Titan and the Radar, both expected in October, supposed to ship at the end of this month. Do we have price information on either of these guys? Because that is also a big selling factor. I mean, if they're nice and cheap and they're these beautiful little phones, then that's a lot different than these lovely Microsoft phones that nobody wants to shell out a bunch of money for because nobody's using them.
The Radar is supposed to be somewhere around the $200 price with the contract. The Titan pricing isn't available yet.
So that's like similar to like a high-end like feature phone. You think that could be another adoption vector? You know, the feature phone people that are kind of moving up but don't want, you know, oh, all the icons, I'm overwhelmed. You know, I mean, hell, I get like that. I'm on Android and I have six icons on my screen just because it's like I hate doing the thing where you flip and can't.
Isn't that actually Microsoft's ad campaign for Windows Phone? Like
exactly.
App overload?
Yes. No, it's totally true. You ever do that? You're like flipping through screens and you're like, wait, what am I looking for again?
Their
it's like walking into the kitchen.
Their campaign obviously needs some adjusting because they actually are trying to give you exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. You still aren't interested in a Mango phone. Yeah. All right, let's move on now to some other Microsoft news, but it's quite a bit different. Lawsuit claiming Microsoft is tracking their mobile users against the express wishes of these mobile users. The issue comes from a camera application that's present on all Windows Phone 7 handsets. And there's a lawsuit that's been filed by a woman by the name of Rebecca Cousineau. She says the camera app is tracking and transmitting data to Microsoft, even if the owner of the handset has opted out of any such sharing in Windows Phone 7 software. Now, you'll recall when Microsoft and a few other the big names, Google, Apple, to name a couple, were called to Congress back in April over privacy concerns because both Google and Apple have had to deal with this as well. Microsoft said location data is always with the express consent of the user, but they did say tracking users' location really does help deliver more useful and relevant experiences to users. So they're saying, listen, we admit it. We want to have location tracking available because it helps us give a better experience. And so does everybody else. I mean, Apple's said the same thing as well. But we're not going to do it if someone doesn't want us to. Microsoft hasn't commented. Obviously, they're preparing a statement. They're going to have to word it carefully. What's interesting to me about this is, hey, if Rebecca can prove that any of this is going on, that's very damning towards Microsoft. But where's her proof? I mean, if this is just like geolocating pictures?
Yeah, that's the thing. That was my first thought when I first saw this was, oh, great, it's another one of those, you know, because you would take a photo with your Android or your iOS phone and it would, by default, typically, they've changed this in the newer versions where you get the choice to actually turn it off, at least in iOS, based on different applications, what it does is. But the camera would go ahead and put your GPS location in the EXIF data, and then people would put it up on, you know, TwitPic, and then and then there was a big brouhaha over, like, oh, hey, now we can see where all your pictures were taken. And
right.
I was like, oh, I didn't even realize I was doing that. I could understand if it was that, but the way that this sounds is like that this user actually went through, and I guess the only way you would really do this well is to packet sniff it, to actually put it on like a test network and sniff what's going in and out of the phone. And I don't know, I'd be interested to see what their research actually shows, because if that's the case, well then, you know, there you go, and that's something everybody needs to know. I wish that there was something like, I don't know, like not like a police force or something, but some sort of an open organization or something of people that would basically packet sniff smartphone applications. You know, I actually just recently did this, just the same thing on my, I was having some suspicions with my old Android phone. Mm-hmm. So I ran some, ran it through a test network with Packet Sniffer and was taking a look at all the traffic that was coming through. Was amazed to see no applications running, how much crap was coming out of there, just going to like marketing places that like track where you're touching and stuff like that, kind of like analytics sites. So I don't know, I could see this being one of those pieces of background data.
I wonder if this is actually Microsoft's problem or this was another application. Maybe it was hooking into the APIs of the camera and sending things out in the background. Maybe something like that. I mean, if Microsoft went to Congress and said, we don't do this, and then they find out they're lying about this, this is going to be a much bigger deal in the long run.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with how application installation goes on the Windows Phone 7 devices, on Android at least. When you install something, it asks you, it shows you all the different, like, oh, we want access to your text messages, and we want access to this, and your GPS, and that, and the other thing. So you at least know going into it, oh, okay, it's going to use my GPS data. Who knows what for?
So how many people just click the button, yep, I want the yep.
Yeah, but you're saying, like, if it is, though, a third-party application, well, then there's Microsoft's defense. Like, hey.
We didn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, then again, Microsoft really needs to be, you know, their situation with these third-party developers needs to be rock solid so they can't say things like, ooh, yeah, all your information actually was tracked. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't us. That was that cute little camera app that you downloaded. I mean, they're ultimately responsible because it's their software. All right. Well, we will keep an eye on this case and see what the evidence is against Microsoft and where it goes from here. Meanwhile, Google may be on the verge of resurrecting G Drive, which, if you recall back in 2006, Google was testing an online storage service, which was internally known as Platypus, and ended up being disclosed at an analyst meeting as G Drive, and media went nuts. Everyone talked about it for a while, but it was actually never anything that was released. And finally, I don't know, everyone just moved on. I don't know, G Drive, it just didn't go anywhere. And it turns out that the book in the Plex ended up detailing what happened. Under Brad Horowitz, the project, G Drive, ended up being shelved in 2008. So it was a couple years later.
2008, I'm showing it being shelved in January of 2005. Oh, wait, that's right. I'm looking at sourceforge.net/projects/G Drive, the one that turns your Gmail into
the other G Drive.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, this was an internal project of Google's. The idea, you know, it's something storage in the cloud type of a thing. Anyway, in 2008, Google worried that this whole file concept was outdated. So the project didn't go anywhere. Turns out that as of this morning, Chromium Cobra View's issue list now includes a ticket to the URL, can you guess? drive.google.com.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's in the browser code. And then there was a Hacker News thread. Is Google Drive coming soon? So, of course, everyone's sort of wondering, what's the deal with this? And it's either it's not really a big deal because there's really only one reference to it, or it is a big deal and Google's really trying to keep this under wraps because they're trying. What would it be? Some sort of a.
Obviously, it's some sort of API for when you're trying to do your browsing session and you're also driving a vehicle.
No, you know, it's for the
laptop
or driverless cars.
The Maps API,
then it would be drive.
Oh, that's what you launch when you don't want to drive.
Or maybe it's drivers for your new Chromebook, and you need to update your Wi-Fi drivers, get better performance.
Because all Chromebooks won't have the letter R, so they have to write drive.
There you go.
Now, I'm having the weirdest sense of deja vu with this story. Either I'm processing it wrong, or like I could have sworn we've heard this story like 1,000 times.
You know, we did,
well, we
actually.
Did. We did. Well, it was just 5 years ago.
And, yeah, it just seems like that.
By who?
By the
Gmail thing. But no, but that's the interesting thing about this is the whole qualm of, oh, we need to shelf this because the whole concept of files are flawed. Didn't we hear that from Microsoft with, like, leading up to Windows 7? There was going to be the WinFS, the WinFile system that was kind of, like, more database-like.
Oh, yeah, and way back?
Yeah, with Longhorn. Yeah. Well, where's that? You know, the whole idea that, oh, we need to – Microsoft shelved that because and it was going to kind of, like, change the paradigm of files and folders. Meanwhile, you know, Google with Google Docs has embraced files where you can just upload directories.
What would G Drive even offer? If you have Google Music where you can upload all your music, or if you have Google Docs where you can upload your docs, and Picasa, you can upload all your photos, what's left? Video, YouTube. So What is Google Drive going to allow you to do?
And yet, go ahead.
A Dropbox-like syncing service.
Yeah,
so you access Drive at drive.google.com from a variety of devices. Could be pretty much anything that has an internet connection. And you can share your files that way. Dropbox is a huge success. I mean, so many people who use Dropbox find it.
Valuation of $4 billion.
You think we have that same kind of desktop client feel where you could just drop stuff to your actual, into a folder? Or are you just talking about a web interface with the upload button, then just sorts it out on its own?
Well, then you can do that with Dropbox, too. I mean, the client is awesome, but you can use a web interface if you need to. So this could just be the first in Google's efforts to create a Dropbox killer.
The difference being that, you know, Dropbox is that kind of old paradigm of, I have all my files, I organize them in folders, maybe I have my music and my videos and my documents on Dropbox, but they're all, I organize that. And then, like you're saying, with the Google apps, the YouTube and the Google Music and the Google Docs, that's like its own separate, you know, it's just changing the fundamental way that you think about your files. You know, it's like, do you want to manage it yourself? And I don't know. I think that's one of those things where it's been a mainstay of computing since day one, since CPM or DOS. And we're just the concept of changing that now is just mind-boggling. Like, oh, wait, what? No files? Like, of course. No, sorry. I don't know how you would do it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Spotlight on Mac. I was like, oh, don't worry about the folder. Just use the Spotlight.
I don't care if they actually come out with this. What I want to see is search on Plus. That's the next thing I want to see before. Like, I want to be able to search Google properties instead of uploading my stuff. I know it's a crazy idea. So I want Google to search something, but whatever.
Not a crazy idea. It's just
all public posts, though. That's the thing. You can't search for, like, when somebody sends you one message.
But, I mean, that was the whole concept behind Gmail when it first launched, right? Is we're not going to delete anything. You know, we're not really – you can create folders, but that's not really the point. The point is just to search for stuff because it's all going to be archived type of thing.
Yeah, that's when you end up like me where you're 82% full in your Gmail.
Well, exactly. It's like that's a great concept, but things are complicated. You have to put things in folders and assign permissions and labels and that sort of thing. So I don't know. I think a Dropbox type service would be great. Of course, it's worth mentioning that Google has not said that they're doing anything like this. It's pure speculation from people who found a URL in some code and
hope that
it means
something. That's how Circles was found out, though, too. The Circles for Google and all their other...
But it would make sense, though, that it would be in Chrome, because if you're going to launch something like that, it would be part of the browser. I mean, that's where you've got your biggest foothold, and especially
actually,
that'd
be a great site to go to when you want to know where your files are on Chrome OS, because you're like, where are my files going on this thing? Does it have anything? Okay, drive.google.com. There it is. There's my pseudo drive structure.
Oh, right, because it would, as opposed to typing in /://
which is a hideous way to do
absolutely.
It on Chrome OS.
Yeah. Well, then again, Chrome being the first browser to just go ahead and remove the HTTP completely out of the browser. You don't even see it unless you're on an HTTPS site. You don't even see the old HTTP://. I've said too many slashes. We should move on.
All right, let's
slashed
move on.
Out.
We have quite a bit of tablet news coming up and a big story in the WikiLeaks case. But first, I want to take a moment to thank Slingbox for sponsoring this episode of TNT. If you're not familiar with Slingbox, man, you got to get on the bandwagon, especially now that like the kids are back in school and everybody's on the go and schedules are getting crazy and you don't have time to sit there and watch that cable TV that you're paying for. You got to have Slingbox because it keeps you able to watch anything that's on your television, even stuff that you've DVR'd as you're on the go. On a mobile device, your iPad. iPad app is one of Slingbox's new latest creations, and it's amazing. You can watch your home TV on that iPad anywhere you take it. You can find Slingbox. Go in to Best Buy and get a demo. You can also go to slingbox.com, and they've got great demos here that give you a really good idea of how Slingbox works. It's amazing. Slingbox is truly your living room home theater, amazing as it is, and all of your recorded shows packed up and taken with you on the go and watched on a variety of devices, and again, on the iPad app. It's awesome. Slingbox.com. We thank them very much for supporting this episode of TNT. And now on to WikiLeaks. They're suing. They're so happy.
Yeah, they're suing The Guardian. Now, there was
this newspaper in Britain.
Yeah, thank you. There was this giant file of unredacted cables that WikiLeaks had intercepted, and it was password protected. And this was a while ago. And the thing is, a Guardian journalist published a book in February that actually showed the password for this giant file. And at this point, WikiLeaks has sued this journalist for doing this. They're saying has negligently disclosed top-secret WikiLeaks decryption passwords to hundreds of thousands of unredacted, unpublished U.S. diplomatic cables. The Guardian, on the other hand, is saying, look, WikiLeaks, our book was published in February. It contained a password, but no details on the files. And we were told it was a temporary password that would expire. So, you know, basically get off our backs. So this is just another one of the nice WikiLeaks continuation of this saga.
It seems the resident of Germany, or the individual in Germany, is rumored to be the OpenLeaks rival founder and slash defector of WikiLeaks, Daniel Domscheitberg. Sorry, mein Deutsch ist nicht so gut.
But, it's better than mine. We'll take it.
All right.
Your Deutsch what now?
Yeah. I just found that interesting.
Well, so, okay. So Guardian saying, listen, you got a point. We didn't think we were doing anything wrong. This is not like some malicious thing, WikiLeaks. So, I mean, where do we go from here?
It's weird because, so WikiLeaks leaked this actual file. The Guardian puts out the information. So they're mad that the leaked information was actually read.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, what if you didn't put it out there in the first place?
Aha.
What?
You have a sound point there.
But they're called WikiLeaks.
Yes.
Again with the logic. Oh, logic has no place in lawsuits. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right. Let's move on to something fun, like tablets. Quite a few tablets are coming to a lap or two hands.
Before we get to tablets, soon. Talk about the WikiLeaks being attacked by Anonymous.
Oh, there you go. That's a turn of play, too, because typically Anonymous is very supporting of WikiLeaks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't want to skip over this. Go ahead, Ayaz.
Well, this is all Darren right here. Okay, he's the expert. So why don't you explain what happened and try to make it. Well, I guess
it seems that that Anonymous is actually testing out a new tool that is dubbed RefRef, R-E-F-R-E-F, and it attacked, among WikiLeaks, some other sites like Pastebin and even 4chan. They're trying out this new tool that you guys know that they love. Anonymous loves the DDoS,
mm-hmm.
And the go-to tool for that is the Low Orbiting Ion Cannon, or LOIC, which basically does a denial of service attack in the old school sense, where it just kind of exhausts your bandwidth and your CPU by just sending a ton of packets. But this this new RefRef attack is interesting coming out of Anonymous, as it uses a database server to attack itself. All the client has to do is send like two pseudobytes, and then basically packets, and then basically the server will attack itself. It sends like a SQL request along with a JavaScript file, mm-hmm. that gets cached, and then the SQL server parsing this JavaScript file ends up exhausting its own CPU resources. You probably notice this when you ever go to a forum and you go to search a forum and you have to enter a CAPTCHA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to slow you down, because all of those SQL like queries are really CPU exhaustive. And if you could just like sit there searching over, that's not it, and keep searching, you could really slow down a website easily. So this is taking advantage of that, and kind of an interesting and innovative way. Of course, this all just being based on a common vulnerability in a lot of servers. So even the attackers say, hey, this is only going to work a few times before people like come, you know, get wise to it and patch it. But
does anyone find it odd they went after WikiLeaks, Pastebin, and 4chan?
Yeah, even
of all the places to go after.
I mean, yeah, I thought that these were the sites that they would go after other people for screwing with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
is no one safe?
Yeah, even Pastebin.
Are there no allegiances we can count on?
No honor.
Yeah, even Pastebin went ahead and tweeted, "Please do not test your software on us again," and then linked to the graph that's just like spike. Yeah.
All right, can we move on to fun tablets now, Ayaz?
I'd love to.
Okay. Two new Samsung devices. I mean, I say tablets, but I mean it's kind of up to you whether you think they're tablets or phones or somewhere in between. So from Samsung, we have the Galaxy Note with a 5.3-inch screen.
5.3-inch screen. This is a very bizarre-sized phone.
Okay, it's a big phone. It's a pretty phone.
It's got a stylus. So that's why it's called the Note.
I'm sorry. You asked earlier if the Windows Phone 7 was going to wean me. No, because this story came out. From now on, the Note will be referred to as Darren's future girlfriend. This thing is awesome.
Okay, So the size of you like the fact that it's a little bit bigger than the average phone. This is not weird to you.
No, I love it.
Where are you going to put it?
In my pocket.
You have big jeans then.
Yes.
Okay.
You know what they say,
I've been carrying them through my family for years.
They've been big phones.
Yes.
Because I think that is what is going to bother a lot of people is that they're used to a phone being a certain form factor in your hand, and it's like if it's bigger than the general size, but it's not even as big as a 7-inch tablet.
I don't know. See, that's the thing is I don't want to carry around a tablet and a smartphone. Mm-hmm. I want that in between. When the Dell Streak came out, I was like, ooh. But it wasn't quite big enough and way too bulky. This looks like it.
Why stop there? Why not with the 7.7-inch Galaxy Tab?
No, because that's the thing is I have a 7-inch tablet. It doesn't fit in my jeans.
So
and I'm not going to get bigger jeans.
You're not going to get like a Scotty Vest branded jeans or something.
I'm not that guy, but this.
So 5.3 is just perfect.
I think it's just, well, I don't know. I mean, I'd go as big as 6.
When phones went from 4 to 4.5 to 4.7, that sounded crazy to me. But 5.3.
That's it. That's the sweet spot. I think the design of the phone needs to be whatever the maximum payload of the average male jeans are. Because, I mean, you're going to just put it in your purse anyway, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm not putting phones in my jeans in general, but I'm glad that you're excited about it because I thought that we'd all say,
oh, no,
this is a little bit too big.
I just thought it was a nice small tablet.
Yeah. This is it.
I didn't think it was a thing that you should be carrying
the
around.
The display is supposed to be very nice.
I'm a little bummed that it's only a single core processor. I would have hoped that it would have been dual, but you know.
Well, it's got the space to dissipate heat.
That's the other thing, though, is I haven't seen the resolution of it. I haven't seen the specs. If this thing is 800 by 480, I'm not going to be nearly as excited.
It's Samsung's new HD Super AMOLED display, and it has a stylus.
And it's super. I don't know.
You're not a stylus guy. There's no way you're a stylus guy.
No, I don't like stylus. I had a Windows Phone 5, whatever it was, Pocket PC, I never used the stylus.
I was like,
there's a fingernail.
Yeah, fingernail guy. Yeah, are you kidding? That's the way to do it.
Samsung also is coming up with the Tab 7.7, which looks a lot like the original 7-inch Tab, but it runs Honeycomb 3.2, which is optimized for 7-inch tablets. 12 ounces, and Samsung says it is the thinnest tablet yet at 7.89 millimeters. Mm. Has Super AMOLED Plus screen and a pretty hefty 1.4 gigahertz dual-core processor. I like the thin idea of it. I mean, the 7-inch Tab did not go over really well. But it wasn't ready.
So they have the 7-inch, the 7.7, the 8.9, and the 10.1, just, and this 5.3.
It's like they're just trying to.
The only thing we're missing is
us.
A 6-inch. That's the only device size that doesn't exist.
But you don't want a 6-inch.
I'd take a 6, and that's the max.
Okay.
I don't think, that's as big as the pocket.
Because that's still in your pocket category. 7.7, nope. Even if it's thin and light and beautiful.
I got one pair of jeans that'll fit in the back pocket. But I got to say, though, it is thin. It is beautiful. 1280 by 800 display, dual core. Yeah, shrink that bad boy.
Yeah, thinnest tablet yet. So Tab 7.7.
It was thinnest for a little bit, actually.
Right.
Toshiba went ahead and just undercut them entirely. Now, Toshiba made that Thrive. You guys remember the Thrive? It's the size of this table.
Yep.
It's gigantic. It's the bulky one. This one is called the AT200 because they renamed the Thrive, I think, the AT100. 7.7 millimeters thick. So it's slightly thinner than the iPad and the 10.1. Let's see. What was the Tab again? The Tab was 7.89. So this just unseated Samsung's
my goodness.
Tab 7.7. So that was the world's thinnest until Toshiba showed off their device. Micro
you know,
USB.
They really should do their homework before they say things like that.
Well, they did.
Because on the same day, a competitor has something that's thinner than the one they said, thinnest in the world.
For like 3 hours, they were on top of the world. Right. And they're like, oh, no! Dang! We're gonna, like, they put a post-it up on their IFA sign. You know, they're like, second thinnest.
Well, Lenovo gets to claim least expensive that doesn't suck. With the IdeaPad A1, that's tickling my technolust.
$200 price tag.
That's a good price point for
a tablet.
I don't
know. You can get two touchpads for that.
Sandwich them together. Get a nice leather case.
That's like
that
quad core
like
when there's two of them, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, you get some Nopix on there and you just do some...
The Lenovo 7-inch, $199 Android tablet. You're excited about this one? You want to carry around a 7-inch?
So it's running Gingerbread, single core, Cortex A8 processor. front and rear facing cams.
It doesn't look like it's going to get honeycomb.
Yeah, go back to the running gingerbread point, and that'll tell you that you probably don't
want it. $200 when you just go through the work and put honeycomb on yourself?
Well, I guess you could, but the majority of people aren't going to do that.
What I think about this, though, is you see so many of these coming out of China, the inexpensive tablet Android ones, but they don't have the marketplace, so you can't get the Gmail and all that stuff. This looks like the best competitor to those. So if you were already looking at some of those ridiculous knockoff ones, then this is your one.
Mm-hmm. So the Samsung devices, no pricing yet. We'll look for that soon. Of course, Lenovo, $200. And then Toshiba's AT200, apparently going to hit Europe somewhere in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. No pricing information on that yet. I don't know. I feel like the Toshiba is the one out of all four of these that we just talked about. If we even want to call the Galaxy Note in the tablet category, which I really don't think it is.
Note.
Samsung's future girlfriend.
Yeah,
right. It's like the Galaxy S2 Epic 4G Touch. So this is the Samsung Note, Darren Kitchen's future girlfriend.
Head just exploded. Yes, thank you.
Tablets.
Forget tablets.
All right, forget tablets. Let's go into ultrabooks.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why that always makes me. Ultrabooks, it's just like the silliest
name. It's the ultrabook.
When you're in eighth grade, you're like, this is the coolest name ever, ultrabooks.
But the commercials can be like, Sunday at the Megaplex. It's the ultrabooks.
I think ultrabook is a silly name, too, but it's like, where else were they going to go? It's a netbook that's more exciting, and in many cases, it's a lot lighter.
Shh, don't say netbook. Everybody.
Well, no, netbook is the tablet's the new netbook. I mean, didn't Lenovo just show us that with the $200 one,
But on the other side of tablets, then you have the next generation of netbooks that act more like netbooks than tablets, and they're ultrabooks, like Lenovo's U300S ultrabook. They also announced U300 and U400 IdeaPads, all set for October launches. The U300S weighs just under 3 pounds, and it's probably the closest competitor to a MacBook Air that we've seen so far. Keyboard is not backlit, although Lenovo says it is spill-proof.
Ooh.
So there you go. That's kind of fun. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know. We can test it on something. Started at about $1,200. The U300 is about 3.5 pounds. It's starting at $800, so quite a drop there. And then the U400 is about 4.5 pounds. And of course, we're talking about the weight because, again, these are sort of that whole MacBook Air light but still very powerful competitor kind of stuff. The U400 has a dedicated graphics card. It's the only one of the three that does. That goes for about $849. They all have the 1366 by 768 display, which is the same as the 11-inch MacBook Air.
That's like everything has that display now. I've got an 11-inch right here, and it's got that display. Tired of that resolution.
They all support, is it WiDi or WiDi?
It's WiDi.
WiDi.
That's how
you can send video to an external display wirelessly. HDMI output, USB 3.0. So, I think the price differentiation, in the graphics card for the U400 is really going to stand out to people, but I don't know. I think the U300S looks pretty nice.
I think that businesses are going to love this. I can attest to the spill-proof nature of Lenovo laptops. If you look at the bottom, they have these like channels for... effectively, look, you're going to be working...
coffee channel?
Exactly. You're sitting there, you're working all day, and then you're like, oh, no.
Coffee canal.
Coffee. And it actually...
you get that one email, you're just like, I've had it. Boom.
It has three different ports, if you want to call them that, forever exit. I'm like... this should be on all laptops.
You're right. If we've got HDMI ports and USB ports, why don't we all have coffee ports?
Yeah. The coffee canal.
But yeah, that's always really helpful. And I'm thinking businesses are going to love this. At 3 pounds.
I like the price points too. $850 and $1,195. Not bad. And we're talking i7s. So decent processors in these things too. Definitely not in the netbook category.
Just kind of curious what it's going to do to battery on it, though. I mean, Intel wanted these things under $1,000. This is pretty close. And the most expensive one is
I'd be more concerned with heat than the battery at this point, because it's like at that thin, at that small, where's the heat going to go? All right, your lap.
That's why it's a notebook, ultrabook.
I know, of course.
It's an ultrabook because it keeps you warm, too.
Oh.
Speaking of batteries, Toshiba embarks on... an ultrabook quest of their own with the 13-inch Z830. And the reason I mentioned batteries is because this has no removable battery at all. And Toshiba says that it's giving them 20% better battery life because they don't actually have to build it inside a removable casing. And, with that aside, it's a 13-inch. It's 0.63 inches thick, so it's nice and thin. Weighs just under 2.5 pounds. 128 gigabyte solid state drive, 6 gigabytes of RAM, and then you have a choice of either a Core i3, i5, or i7 processor. A USB 3.0 port, two USB 2 ports, HDMI out, VGA out, and an SD card slot. Now, the pricing is they haven't come forward on what everything will be priced, but they do say at least one of them, which of course is the base model, that'll be the i3, will be under $1,000, and it's due in November. They are due in November.
I think we always downgrade the i3. i3 is actually a pretty good processor.
It's not that bad.
They're saying at least one will be under $1,000. It won't be the i5.
It'll be the i7. Yeah. They're like, you know what? This one will be the cheapest one. No. Mess with you.
How do you guys feel about the non-removable battery aspect of that? So that's a very Apple thing to do.
Well, Alienware's also done it. I've seen one of those. So that's also weird. That seems to annoy a lot of people. I mean, at this point, I don't even care.
See, it makes sense that, you know, you're trying to get the Ultrabook as small as possible. By not making it a removable battery, you can get that much less material in it. And yet, I kind of look at these things going, huh. Now, if this was like a $2,000 machine, I would understand a little bit more, because that kind of person that buys the $2,000, whatever the smallest one is, they're going to next year do the same exact thing before that battery wears out. Or maybe they're not the person that uses their computer as heavily as to need spare batteries. But I don't know.
Yeah, when I first read this, I thought, no removable battery. Ooh, people aren't going to like that. And then I thought, when's the last time I even thought about the battery in my laptop? I haven't played with it.
I'm telling you, when my iPod would die, my iPod Touch, I'd be like, no battery removal. And then that's only when I notice it. Not until like that one time I don't have a charger where I have to scour for one.
But I actually carry around spare Samsung batteries just for my phone, because that's just how you have to get through the day with a smartphone these days. But not so much with the laptops anymore.
You're not just carrying like a belt full of laptop batteries?
I have a bandolier. It's kind of like Chewbacca's.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Right there. I mean,
you get your like Wi-Fi pineapple on your batteries, a couple of Uber tooths in there. Yeah, it's good.
I think I'm missing out on a lot of battery fashion. Clearly, I'm not thinking about batteries enough.
Battery bandolier is coming.
See, that I could fit. Maybe the 7-inch would fit on that, you know?
Well, I would think a 7-inch could be more like a championship belt, and you could put little tablets on the side, and you can change your championships as you go along. Yeah.
Wow.
Holy crap.
You just blew my mind.
It's going to happen.
On to the news.
Speaking
views.
Of blowing up.
I had to stop you guys there before it got weird.
We're talking fashion.
The UK looks like it's going to be the first nation to allow use of White Spaces broadband services. Unused television or radio spectrum would become free to use for things like data connectivity up to speeds up to 22 megabits per second. UK regulator Ofcom says the amount of white space available is equivalent to all the spectrum used for 3G services. The white space would be available to offload 3G networks as well, which could mean improved wireless speeds for everybody.
Faster wireless for all. That's
love
a
it.
Great idea. Sony's bunch of online services just got a new blanket name, Sony Entertainment Network. So SEN will include Sony's Music Unlimited, Video Unlimited, and the PlayStation Network. This shouldn't really change the functionality of the services, but it should make it a lot easier to find things. Now they all have the same kind of blanket name.
Yeah. And hopefully a firewall this time. Now, Apple's Eddie Q, the guy who runs the various iTunes stores, iAd, and more, he's been upgraded. He's the Senior Vice President of Internet Software and Services. And Q is now reporting directly to Apple's new CEO, Tim Cook. So this is actually Tim Cook's first major appointment since taking over for Steve Jobs last week. Well, I'm sure he's had plenty of appointments, but now he's appointed someone.
He's just busier.
He's busier.
And he's delegating other stuff.
There we go. That's the way to do it.
HP is making new touchpads. We've talked about that. But it might not just be for you and me, the salivating public. Stern AG analyst Sean Wu says that HP is trying to appease its component suppliers and manufacturing partners. The next run of the not-quite-dead touchpad, it's funny, it's just hanging on to dear life, will comprise of 500,000 to 1 million units. How about that? Touchpad lives!
Yeah, to not annoy, apparently. The website that houses the Linux kernel archive and the Android open source project repositories was hacked last month. A Trojan was discovered after a suspicious error message appeared. Site administrator John Howley has taken down the code repositories for the Android open source project at Google's request. The full repercussions of the hack aren't fully known just yet, but the Linux kernel probably isn't compromised due to its development workflow, because people are checking that all the time, because if there's something in there, it's trouble.
Yeah, but at least it's not, you know, proprietary, and we wouldn't know. It's open,
so
we do know.
And review it.
Yeah. Speaking of something we can know that the deal between Starz and Netflix has come to an end.
No!
Yeah, Starz says its renewal talks weren't that fruitful. So that means that Netflix is going to be losing some of its newest content. And then, oh, Netflix, they took an 8% hit after the announcement on the stock. Ouch.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, they needed more content, not less.
I want more, not less.
Hey, Amazon, you want some content?
I've got more bad news, too, since we're talking about bad news. More bad news from DigiNotar. They may have issued digital certificates for Yahoo and Tor to hackers. Now, earlier, we reported that DigiNotar had issued fraudulent Google and Mozilla certificates. A Dutch security consultant now says about estimation of about 200 certificates were generated by attackers. The story is fascinating because it doesn't sound like DigiNotar necessarily even knows what's going on here.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, I mean, Moxie Marlin Spike was right. There's no accountability when it comes to SSL. Mm. You know, it's up to the browsers now to be like, oh, block those. It's like, what do they, there's no repercussions for this registrar. They're just like, sorry, our bad.
Right.
Sorry, our bad. Anyway, sorry, I could go on for a while on that.
After 17 years, would you go on 17 years? Doom.
Still playing that one.
Doom can be sold to teenagers in Germany, so rejoice. The game's content had placed it, or its rating, had placed it in the same category as pornography. But apparently things have changed. The restrictions made by Germany's Federal Department of Media harmful to young persons, it's quite a department, have expired, and now the game is considered to be of artistic and scientific interest because the game won't appeal to youngsters anymore. Could be because it's a really old game.
Yeah, well, I know. But to those teenagers that are about to play it for the first time in Germany, that played by the rules, just going to give you a little hint, IDDQD. You're going
to
want that.
I mean, time God goes note. By and you go from same category as pornography to artistic and scientific.
That's good stuff.
Out of Germany.
Check this out. Experian Hitwise says that Google Plus weekly traffic is dropping. Back in July, Google Plus had a peak of 1.8 million weekly hits. And in August, has seen a range of 1.16 to 1.19 million. So somewhere, someone on Facebook is tenting their fingers and saying, yes.
Excellent.
And Google Plus is still semi-open, right? Like, it's not entirely open, but everybody has a ton of invites. Is that where it's at right now?
Yeah, it's technically still in beta, but when people ask me for invites, I'm always like, really?
Field trial. I don't even think it's at a beta yet.
That's true.
So it's not even.
You're right.
Ooh, field trial. I like that.
But yes, I mean, anybody who's connected has 150 invites. It's pretty easy to get one now. But still not in the same category as Facebook yet.
Right.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Let's make it rain.
Randomizer.
It's funny that you say let's make it rain, Darren, because that's exactly what this random story is about. In fact, it's about making it rain by shooting lasers into the sky.
You know how I feel about lasers.
How do you feel about lasers?
I have a special place in my heart for lasers.
Who doesn't love lasers? This is a story from Slashdot. Apparently last year, a team of researchers at Switzerland's University of Geneva came up with a way to make it rain, which is really thinking outside the box. Shooting lasers into the sky, which seems crazy, but they've been performing some tests around Lake Geneva. And from an article that we found on Slashdot, records from 133 hours of firings into the sky revealed that intense pulses of laser light created nitric acid particles into the air that behaved like atmospheric glue that binds the water molecules together into droplets and prevents them from re-evaporating. Then, within seconds, they grow into actual drops, and they drop, like rain, out of the sky.
I'm sorry, but I'm like, I love this story, and I love the first comment. I have to quote Anonymous Coward here, who says, while they weren't able to make the rain fall, they did make 34 pigeons, 12 sparrows, 334 bees, and one hang glider fall from the sky.
Nice.
It's the amount of energy expended in firing a laser for that long, and you could just take water in a hose and just pump it through a pump.
That's not
and make
it
rain
about.
That way.
It's not about the amount of energy expended. If that was the case, then no hacker would ever do anything ridiculous.
Why be practical? And wow, 133 hours just like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fire a laser right there.
But 133 hours gave them the capability to create droplets from nothing. Don't you think that that's progress? Yeah, they're not ready to, like, make a thunderstorm in, you know, a drought-stricken region of Africa.
Yeah, but still this has to is be the
beginning stage.
Yeah.
All right, next week I'm just going to stick a flashlight in the air.
Ooh, or that's a new weapon. You know, you could use, like, you know, give us all of your bank's money or we will make it rain.
We'll make it like Seattle.
Yeah. Well, it'll be like Seattle.
Cloudy
you don't want that.
Yeah. See them clouds?
We'll point our lasers at your city. can we use this to do something about San Francisco? Anyway.
What, you want it to rain more in San Francisco?
No, to make the fog go away somehow. A fog-repelling
laser.
That's
a different kind of laser. Those are giant fans.
You're thinking of the future, Darren. Crazy lasers and moving.
Boy, you guys, lasers into the sky making droplets. Tough crowd.
Yeah,
let's move on to the calendar. You'd think it already started with all the product announcements we've already talked about and heard about, but IFA Berlin actually officially opens tomorrow, September 2nd, so expect even more, although some of the good stuff always gets leaked out ahead of time. Also kicking off tomorrow is Dragon Con in Atlanta. We talked about that at the beginning of the show, and reminder, Tom is off today and tomorrow, but he is shooting an extra special TNT on Saturday from Dragon Con, which will run on Monday, which is Labor Day, for a special Labor Day episode. It's going to be good. Hulu has launched its streaming service in Japan for about $20, the equivalent of $20 anyway, monthly. So far, users can stream content to Panasonic TVs, iOS, and select Android devices, not all of them, Blu-ray players and TVs, Xbox 360, PS3 consoles, and Android tablets are coming soon, but they're not available yet. So, you know, it's in its beginning stages. And Verizon wants you with that basic phone to upgrade to a smartphone. Imagine that. So anybody who's eligible to upgrade between now and the end of this year have until September 30th to make the switch. So what do you get if you do that? You get a $100 gift card from the carrier via its wireless trade-in program. So what's cool about this is the gift card can be used for any sort of purchase, but it also can be used for paying off a bill. So if you're running a little low, you got a $100 gift card, you just got to get a smartphone.
Can you trade in your feature phone and then, like, apply to an ETF? You get a smartphone, say, I'm just canceling? Or
yeah, no, but this is only until September 30th, which implies all the good stuff is in October.
That's the way
I look at this.
Good point.
Very good point.
Yeah, they're like, let's get you in another contract before the good stuff comes out.
Easy money sometimes is at the expense of something better, the better smartphone. But yeah, if you're on the fence, this might push you over. Got a voicemail.
Which I've helpfully labeled Canadians for some reason.
Well, it has to do with Canadians, which is just, I mean, let's set it up. It's Canadian focused.
They're America's hat.
Hey, Tom and Sarah, this is Justin calling from Toronto, giving you a little bit of Canadian tech news for this week. Just so you know, Rogers in Canada has announced that their LTE service is going to move to Toronto starting on September 28th. They claim 100 megabits down, but they're saying that people are going to get between 12 and 25 megabits. Meanwhile, Bell and TELUS, personally the carrier that I prefer, they don't seem to have any launch date for their service as of yet. Just giving you an update. When I hear more, so will you. Thanks. This is Justin in Toronto.
Justin is like he's
on the go.
Well, he's training for a marathon.
Clearly.
He's calling in. He's got all sorts of upload speeds. I don't think he should claim 100 if it's more like 25. That's just me.
Well, if your average is going to be something really low, you might as well say infinity.
Up to infinity.
Who is it? Comcast offers 101 megabit internet service here. What's really interesting about it is that the WAN port is only a 10-100 megabit Ethernet jack.
Oh, you don't need to know about that. No. Nobody's going to notice that, right?
Yeah.
When you trade in your
101 megabits. Good luck getting them.
There's a one and a zero.
Yeah. People will notice it. It's 101 slash.
Thank you, T-Dot.
We got an email from Tom in Huntsville, Alabama. Somewhere else. One thought that occurred to me about why Cisco is selling flip video cameras more slowly than HP dumped the touchpad may be related to support. One consistent message I heard regarding the touchpad is that includes 1 year of support. The sooner the HP touchpads are sold, the sooner that 1 year of support begins, the sooner the 1 year support will end. If they want to get rid of the touchpad for good, it will not be until they are no longer responsible for support. That's a really good point. Yeah, I think it also still comes with like a couple of gigabytes of free space at box.net too. So there are other deals they're probably still trying to figure out.
Yeah, but they're not going to support you when you're like, I bricked it trying to put gingerbread on it. You would hope they're not.
If they did, that'd be even more insane.
It's funny because I don't feel like all the people who were scrambling to get the $99 touchpad really made much mention of support. I don't think that not having support would have changed anybody's minds. But it is a good point that the flip video camera, I mean, it kind of just does one thing. So the support isn't really...
As the red button doesn't work.
So much of a, we'll get another an issue. One. Yeah, like there isn't bucks. Any. But yeah, that's a good point, Tom. I got another email from David Lovely. He says, hello, TNT crew. In regards to your report on the randomizer about the Serval project that was yesterday, Tom wondered how the mobile carriers could interfere in its deployment. The Serval mesh would have to have their own slice of spectrum to operate, and it would be certain that the carriers could use every legal means they have in order to prevent use of the spectrum that they own. It would seem that the FCC would have to carve out a spectrum band specifically for this purpose. I don't know what to tell David. I wish Tom was here because I'm sure they could have a nice conversation about this.
He put a note in. He's not even here. He put a note in. Good question. Wi-Fi spectrum is available and a few others. So that's what he's saying. That even if the telecoms try to stop everything,
there's always 2.4 gigahertz
until that's sold. Band. Yeah. That's why we're always concerned when the government thinks about giving away those spectrum to the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi spectrum is available. That's a start. Thanks, David. Want to thank all of the people who submitted to our Tech News Today Reddit page. That's Reddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. What do? We just read like the top 10 names. We thank people like Lord Necron and SP Sheridan and Comp Fixer 87 and Nylum and PC Guy 8088 underscore and TM204. That's the top six anyway.
That's Cap Kipper, who's always there, so.
Kept Kiver, we love you. Thanks for being a Redditor. The great thing is you submit stories, and then even if you don't have anything to submit, go to the page throughout the day, vote stories up or down, and it helps us choose what goes into our lineup. So thanks to everybody who's participating every day. It's really helpful, and it's fun to see you guys and what you're interested in on the show. That's it for this episode of TNT. You can email us at tnt@twit.tv. You can always call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. We got a great guest tomorrow. Simon Dingle, writer, tech host, and expert, is going to be joining us. Darren,
find out about programming UAVs over at HAK5.org.
Thank you. Yeah. I didn't even have to prompt you.
There you go.
See you guys tomorrow. Playing the part of Tom Merritt.